the new scout leader problem. I'm not used to not being a scout.
Don't have to buy them beer. Remember that. You don't have to buy Boy Scouts beer.
Don't worry. I resisted. I denied their request to purchase beer and play Boys.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to another episode of The Sophisticates. I don't know about you, but even after a short week-long hiatus due to weird scheduling mishaps and activity-ness of the summer, it just feels like we've been gone so long, and, you know, I feel a bit of warmth in my heart reuniting with such sophisticated gentlemen as Rajan Mudavi.
And I feel the same way.
Do you? I feel like it's been so long since our night together. And, of course, the long-awaited return of Ryan Pfister.
Yes, every time the wind blew in the Canadian wilderness, it whispered the name Sophisticates.
Oh, I'm imagining you with a giant beard. You're now a man of the woods.
There was about a day of that. The beard peaked, and then it was gone.
Oh, God. As most things in life. Well, with three intellectually exhilarating talking points in hand, I say we get right to business with our first topic, the Boy Scouts. As we have previously mentioned on the podcast, Ryan, you just went on an extraordinary canoe trip with a Boy Scout troop from Pennsylvania, I believe, to where?
To Canada, in Ontario, maybe an hour from the border with the United States.
Gotcha. And you've been involved with the Boy Scouts for a very long time, as long as I've known you. And I used to be a scout as well. Did a Cub Scouts for a while, and then when I got to Boy Scouts, I just kind of, I don't know, I lost interest. They were so hardcore, they're so into camping, they're going on trips every weekend, I just couldn't do it. There was too much other stuff in my life at that time, so I had to let it go. And I've been thinking a lot about your trip and trying to reintroduce yourself to Boy Scouts and being part of this group, and trying to think if Boy Scouts, like, what are they bringing to the table to this day? Are they something that's integral to a person's upbringing? What are they doing for a person that they're not already getting in the world in some other way? And are they too hardcore for their own good?
Well, I think to address that immediate point, there are some troops that are more active than others, and the other thing is you don't have to feel compelled to go on every trip.
I don't know. I feel pressure.
I mean, I'll use that as a segue. The peer pressure does exist, and I'll say that that the biggest thing for me with Boy Scouts, I think the one thing that I really came away from Boy Scouts with is independence from your parents and just from the world in general. You know, I think Boy Scouts has actually become more critical as we get a more and more convenient lifestyle. Because I guess I personally, and I've seen it with other people too, is you know, you kick this kid out to summer camp, and for some of these kids, it's like the first time that their mom hasn't woken them up in the morning.
But don't the dads, you know, and usually go on these trips with them? Like, the people who you were with on this camping trip, weren't they mostly comprised of parents of the 14-year-old boys who were on the trip?
We had eight boys in our group, and there was one other chaperone. That was the father of one of the kids.
Oh, gotcha.
So there are parents that are there, but it's not everybody's parent.
But are they really, like, separating themselves? I'm kind of curious about what you did on this trip and how you think that actually affects someone. And if you see, as the leader of this excursion, seeing the boys, these young people, getting something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's great about it is that you're out in the wilderness, and it's like a real, like, physical challenge. And that it's not like a video game where if you fail, you know, you just turn it off and go eat Cheetos. You know, like,
life should be more like that.
Why do you have to turn it off to eat the Cheetos? Come on.
Oh, yeah, you could eat the Cheetos. Well, because you'll get orange dust in your
N64. I hate that orange dust.
Delay that till our Cheetos topic. But the issue is that, yeah, it's like, you know, you have this pack, and you have to get it to the other side of the trail, you know, and if you don't get it there, or you don't paddle, like, we don't get there, you know. And I mean, it's not actually going to happen, but, like, you know, if you didn't do it at all, like, you'd eventually just collapse, you know, you'd have to get rescued or something, you know, if you didn't make the effort. I think it really gives the kid a sense of accomplishment at the end, because they know that they did this thing personally. Nobody really helped them along, you know.
Right. Well, I'm just, what is the Boy Scouts' current mantra? You know, what is their goal to teach someone? I feel like the group has some sort of ideal, and I'm wondering if it's archaic or not. You know, I'm trying to think back to my own time in Scouts, And while I think their ideas are very noble, I don't know if they're practical, and I don't know if they are reasonable in the current world that we live in. Are they idealistic?
It's a giant head fake is what scouting is. The whole idea is you get these kids out in the wilderness and you teach them outdoor skills, and in the process you teach them values. Their slogan right now is timeless values. Like, the whole point.
Interesting.
Of,
they're embracing the fact that they're very old school.
I mean, you know, I guess it depends on your definition of old school. Like, I guess it sounds a little. Maybe you think this sounds old school, but I mean, I don't
no.
think, you know, being trustworthy and loyal and friendly and courteous and such is old school.
Well, they are, but I know that Boy Scouts have come under heat over the course of their history for not being as open-minded or kind of depending on values that may not be as...
well, no, I agree.
Embracing of the new.
I agree that they have not been the most progressive organization in terms, you know, where there's, you know, where there's niche social issues. And I think that, you know, I've heard various things about this. I haven't really delved into it, but I think part of it has to do with the fact that a big part of the scouting base is in the Western states, like Utah and Texas. And they're very religious there. You know, it's a huge part of the culture.
Well, yeah. I mean,
isn't that part of Scouts? I seem to remember.
It's absolutely.
Like
it is a part of Scouts. I know this because my brother is in Scouts now, and a couple of years ago he had to complete some religion badge, which was basically you had to do something with whatever. I mean, they didn't care what religion you were, but you had to have a religion. You basically, my understanding was, you basically couldn't be an atheist and become and proceed in Scouts.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
I think that's true.
What is the badge? Yeah. Like, what do you have to do to accomplish this badge? I just had this whoa moment. Like, what?
Yeah, so, I forget.
Well, you have to, like, go and, it depends on the specific badge here, but often you just have to, like, go and chat with your pastor or your imam or whatever.
But, yeah, so for my brother, like, he was doing the Hindu version of this. So you had to have, like, two, like, spiritual guides or whatever. One was, like, your teacher, who was probably not in your immediate family. And then the other person was, like, maybe, like, your dad or something, who was going to kind of, like, make sure you kind of kept along with this or whatever.
Well, it's that sort of baggage that I'm just, like, I don't really...
Yeah.
Are there other ways to learn these same values that are not part of Scouts? Like, I really admire getting out into nature and that whole experience, but I just know that there's so much other, like, the service to country, and is that a necessary part of
what
you
like,
really
I
learn,
mean, that,
can learn
that's
out of
part
Scouts?
Of, that's part of what they believe as are important values, that you have a duty to your nation and to your God.
Yeah.
I think that's something that the Scouts view as something that's intrinsic, one of their core values.
I should have done Indian guides. They wouldn't have messed with any of this shit.
They were first. That's like a pre-scouting deal, I think.
I don't know too much about Indian guides.
Let me try to... I guess I want to try to get more specific about what your issue is here. Is your issue, like, is there a way we can teach people these values without having to go out in the wilderness?
No, I think that's a really important part of it. Obviously, I do think that there's an excessive amount of that, or that was my experience in Scouts, where it's like, every weekend we're going on a camping trip, or when we're not, I don't really understand what I'm doing in Scouts. You know what I mean? And so then I have this strange back and forth between complete lack of understanding and then being out in the middle of the woods. Those were my weekends in Scouts. Didn't really understand. I'm making a hand motion here back and forth, but no one
can
see it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I once heard a saying for this, that scouting without outing is just SC. You know, it's all about going out and camping. The right. Scout meetings, like, if you don't have an event scheduled, are very boring.
Right.
You know, you should be planning events and then, like, going out and doing them.
But do you think that's all Scouts needs to do? Do you think that is why Scouts exist?
I mean, the point of scouting is to teach these outdoor skills and values. You know, there's obviously service projects that they do and
right.
you know, a myriad of other things. But
selling popcorn, very important.
Yeah, you got to raise the money somehow to
That's
do this.
That's true.
I guess, yeah, the core of scouting is you know, outdoor skills.
But do you think it's fundamentally that? I guess at the end of the day, that is my one. I'm very curious about today's Scouts, if it's really just about outdoor experiences and interacting with nature and survival skills and that sort of thing, or if it's really some sort of mold for individuals that I don't want you mean kind of
no you're right
conservative
I mean,
ideals and and you know, like army folk almost. You know, it's a very strange topic to tread on, because not everyone's exactly the same. Obviously, not every troop is exactly the same. But there's a sort of old-fashioned ideals that it doesn't seem to have evolved past, even though it has some great aspects to it, like camping.
Well, you know, no, I think you're right. I mean, you know, scouting obviously has a history of, I mean, you just look at scouts and you can see that they're modeled after the army.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's definitely part of it. And I mean, and you obviously do have this danger of, obviously they're a little bit nationalistic, you know, just, you know, you're doing your duty to your country. And obviously there is a danger there. I mean, you see, you know, you have, I think the Hitler Youth were the scouts, and then they just like got rid of the scouts and made this other scout like organization.
Wait, Hitler had scouts?
The Hitler Youth.
Oh, I'm not too familiar with the Hitler Youth.
Yeah. I mean, I think what they actually did is they think they banned scouts. I'm not familiar with the specific history here, but I believe they got rid of scouts, like Boy Scouts, and then made this own organization instead.
As like a replacement.
Yeah, that was more focused on serving Hitler.
It made sense at the time.
I mean, I guess for me, my issue is, I think that scouting gets hung up on a lot of this like very niche social stuff, or too focused on promoting a conservative ideology. I actually have not gotten too much of the, I don't think this conservative ideology thing.
Yeah.
Is too into it. I really haven't experienced that.
Yeah, I was just curious. I don't even know if that does exist. From the outside, it seems like it could be prevalent.
I think that can be a bigger deal in certain areas and certain troops than in others. I think in areas like, you know, where we're from, where people tend to be a bit more open-minded and liberal about things like, you know, homosexuality and stuff. even if that's not condoned by the scouts, people kind of, you know, turn a blind eye to that. But in other areas where they're not as open to these things, then it's more of an issue, I think, that, you know, the scouts, for example, don't allow, you know, like gay troop leaders, or I don't know if I think they don't allow gay boys as well or something like that.
I think they don't allow either. Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's one of the things for me. It's like, I really don't care if a scout is gay or if a leader is gay. Like, I mean, it just doesn't even matter to me. Like, right, and I think that that's what kind of annoys me. There's been a lot of fuss about
it. I think that, like I said, that is more of like that's a kind of a national platform, and it's not so much of an issue in like the areas like we're from, where I'm sure if you're a gay boy and you want to be in the scouts, I don't think anybody will deny you it, because they'll just won't, you know, they will just not address that issue.
Don't ask, don't tell.
You're not going to get support from the organization. Maybe you would be helpful to you.
At the end of the day, I think, you know, I want to promote scouts, because Ryan, I think I'm on board with you. You know, it's at its best, it promotes human ideals and teaching you to be a good person and to help others and to have some skills of independence. But it's just, I hope that as it continues to evolve, and I'm hoping it does evolve, that it becomes more of that and less of some of its other seemingly archaic ideas. And hopefully over this trip, you wore some goofy outfit the whole time. Did you wear a scout uniform when you were canoeing?
I did not. Actually, I kind of broke the rules a little bit, and then I don't have a adult scout
shirt
yet.
What? Now that is where I'm drawing the line. That is terrible. They should enforce you to wear goofy outfits with little bandanas around your neck and a hat, a big hat. So fail for you. And Boy Scouts, get your act together. Why don't we move on to our second topic for today? The urge to pass people.
I was thinking about this when I thought of this topic. I was, while I was living in New York, not with a car, but and so basically what I find is that when I'm walking down the sidewalk, I'll see like someone in front of me, and I might have been completely content at the pace that I was walking, but now I feel like I need to pass that person and then just walk past them. Like if I get close enough to them, then I feel like I need to pass them. There's just, I can't continue to walk, you know, like 10 feet behind this person. I have to pass them and then continue walking. When, if they weren't there, it wouldn't make any difference. And it's probably worse now that I'm driving more frequently. There's a speed that I would be just perfectly happy to drive if there were no cars around. But if there's a car like in front of me driving that same speed, I feel like I need to pass that car so then I can drive at whatever speed I want to drive.
I always feel bad about passing people myself. Yeah. Like I'll see elderly people on the street who are just going so slow, and I'm not in a rush, but I'm moving at, you know, young adult male pace, so yeah. I need to pass them. But then I have this feeling of guilt that I'm you know, throwing dust in their face, and I'm bringing up the fact that they're old and can't move, and I'm only making them more aware of their intimate death, and I feel bad.
I only feel bad about that when they're going slowly, but are kind of like taking up the whole sidewalk, so you very clearly have to like terrible. Slow down and stop so you can get to a point where you can get around them, and then you pick up and then like
leave occasionally walking on the street.
Yeah, or something
you
like that.
You have to walk
yeah.
in dangerous zones.
Vault over them or something, you know?
I mean, I think it's just a big problem with walking in general. I mean, walking is like a big, clear physical differentiator between people. Some people are faster walkers than others, and often it's just, many times it's a function of height.
Yeah.
But some
yeah,
people
absolutely.
Are also not aware of the unspoken pace. You know, I go to somewhere like Times Square in New York. And obviously, it's primordial at best, and it's just people rummaging around and stopping and taking pictures. And for New Yorkers, it's the last place you ever want to go because you know that your pace, the one that you've lived at in your entire life, is coming to a halt. And people don't adapt to that. And even people who live here don't adapt to that.
Well,
you know,
I guess the question is, I mean, I encounter this all the time. I guess not when I've been with you two in New York, because you guys are pretty fast walkers. But
oh yeah,
you know, when you're like hanging out with other friends who are not New Yorkers, you know, or you know, just any friend who's a slow walker, and you constantly have to pace yourself. I'm not even very good. Like, I need a cruise control for walking.
You mean so that you can stick with people who are not up to your speed?
Yeah, because I just don't even know how to do it. Because it's like, do I take smaller steps? Do I decrease the frequency of my steps? It just, I can't really get a slower gait.
But the problem happens for me in that situation is when I'm walking with a group of people, maybe like four or five people, and I'm talking to one person, and that person isn't the slowest walker in the group, and then the two of us tend to just kind of disappear right. off into the distance before we realize that, oh yeah, they're like two blocks behind us now.
But is it because we're driven to move as quickly as we are capable of and to get to our final destination? Or, you know, you mentioned driving on the street, and I think this is apt because the few times that I drive during the year, you know, living here in New York, I kind of open up on the road. I see the speed limits, but I'm capable of going so much faster, and my mind, my New York mind, tells me that I should just go, I should get to the other point as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think New York...
It doesn't seem dangerous.
Yeah, I think New York may have corrupted me in that same manner, because now that I lived in New York for a couple of years, and now I'm out of New York, and I now have to drive to commute to work and everything, and I definitely, I think, on average, drive like 5 to 10 miles an hour faster than I did before I moved to New York.
But do you owe it to the people that you walk with? Do you owe it, do you have to slow down?
I think it's more uncomfortable for someone who doesn't walk fast to walk at your pace than it is for you to slow down to them. So yeah, I think you do.
I mean, I think that the thing is that normally, I mean, most of the time when you're going somewhere, you know, probably 50% of the time, I guess at least, you're probably by yourself. You're trying to go somewhere to even if you're going to see other people. And in that case, it makes sense to walk as fast as you can. I mean, unless you're really just kind of chilling out, enjoying the day, like you probably want to get there.
But then you're passing other people who might become aggravated by your haste, your unnecessary haste.
Well, that's the thing that's really, I mean, you brought up a good point in the beginning here about how you feel bad about passing them. And it's like, you're not really inconveniencing them with your passing. But I guess you're just making you really rationally should not take offense to somebody passing you.
Right.
But I totally do as well.
Right. No, exactly. I rarely get passed.
I don't like it when people pass me at all.
I rarely get passed because I'm a quick walker. But say the other day I'm on an escalator. Oh, no, wait. I'm walking down this giant flight of stairs getting to an express train here in New York. And I'm going down the stairs, and it's a very, very long staircase. And I'm moving quickly. Obviously, I want to get to the bottom. and yet someone is still moving faster than me and passes me, even though I'm actively walking. And that disrupted my whole day. My flow was off. I had been passed, and I don't get passed, and that pissed me off. And now I feel bad if I pass people, because now I know how the feeling. I can empathize.
Does everyone feel like
that? You think that's irrational?
Though? I feel like that, but I don't know if everyone does. Because I feel like if everyone did, then they would just walk and drive faster.
There might be people who have never walked fast enough to know to not be passed. You know what I mean?
Walking is, you know, some people just can't walk as fast as other people, like Pfister said. But driving, you know, you're in a car. There's no physical capability that is preventing you from driving faster.
Oh, I disagree completely with that statement. Once again, I'll bring up old people.
Well, okay, we're not talking about old people. We're talking about, like, people from 16 to 55, 60, 65, I don't know, however old you, before you
people who are not getting the early bird special, the senior discount.
Fascinating, because, yeah, this is, do shorter people who can't walk as fast, do they drive slower?
I don't know.
I think there are able-bodied people who drive slower.
Like, a lot of people, like, you go on the highway, a large percentage of people are driving, like, 70 to 75 miles an hour.
And some people are inexplicably driving 20 miles
per hour
less than that.
And some people inexplicably drive slower than that. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I don't think I'm a huge speeder. Like, I think that
you're a law-abiding citizen.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, I go with the general flow there. I mean, you see the guys out there who are not going with the flow. They're speeding and weaving in and out. You know, I don't do that. But I guess for me, it's different because I feel like there's a risk to going too fast on the highway. But there's no risk to just speed walking.
What if you bump into someone?
Yeah, well, that's actually the issue because I've had that happen. Whereas, like, I could, if I walked slower, like, I would have more time to course correct and not run into someone.
Well, that makes me think that we do owe it to the people who don't walk as fast to avoid injury. You know, we almost have to have self-imposed speed limits for walking so that we don't harm the people who are casually walking along the sidewalk.
Well, okay, so unless you run into someone who is...
That causes me pain.
You know, this is a government... This is like a top-down solution, Patches.
Unless you run into someone for whom falling over is like a serious deal, like they'll break a hip or something. If you run into someone, the worst that happens is they're inconvenienced for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, but they're pissed, and you know how that feels.
Well, look, yeah, obviously, look, this is on you as an individual to limit your walking speed to that at which you would not run into someone else. You know,
yeah, but you could say the same about driving.
Yeah.
As long as you're playing it safe, everyone should be happy. Just walk with safety. Are these the sort of things you learn in the woods?
Yeah, you learn a little bit of that. I mean, I think that you would also say that, you know, once you're in the woods, you kind of do away with these with silly rules.
Back to nature.
You get the rules that matter, the rules that keep you alive.
Gotcha. On that note, let us move to our third and final topic for today. Drinking more than our parents.
Okay, so I was on a vacation recently, and I've experienced, I guess, this throughout my life, too, that you see these news articles about how people binge drink and how it's supposedly a growing epidemic. That there's all kinds of people drinking, and now they're pre-gaming before the party, so they're already drunk, and then they're getting even drunker. And I was just trying to figure out if, you know, and I guess the thing that kind of cemented me is I was hanging out, and I heard people telling, you know, stories about the times when they were drunk, you know. And I just wondered if our, you know, obviously our parents probably have stories about the times when they were drunk too, but I wonder if they actually got less drunk than we do now. Are people really consuming more alcohol now than they did in a previous generation?
I get the impression that, I mean, the past was a wilder time. There were always people who were pushing alcohol, drug, whatever use. I mean, that was always existing. But you're basically saying, is it as on the scale as today, right?
I guess that I'm more interested from kind of a cultural perspective, in that I think in certain groups, alcohol becomes a just such a huge bonding factor, like almost the primary bonding factor.
I think that was the case back, you know, in our parents' day and probably even our grandparents' day. You know, now that we have a thousand avenues of media to kind of exploit this quote-unquote epidemic, that's probably why the magnifying glass is over it more, and it seems like such an extravagant thing, you know? Now that we have something like Four Loko, the colorful can drink that has, it's the power of Red Bull times 10 plus, like, three beers! You know, it just, we've exploited drinking in a new way, but I don't think I don't think how people consume is different. You know what I mean?
No, I would agree with you there. I think that our parents probably drank as much as we did. Maybe not specifically, but in general for sure. Like, by that I mean our individual parents may or may not have, I don't know, but
my parents are classy.
No, I mean, that's another thing actually though. I think we tend to just like view our parents as parents and forget that they weren't always parents.
Although I'm sure, I mean, I don't know about you, and I'm sure my parents are listening to this, so I have to be very careful. But, you know, I feel like everyone, A, has a story, has heard some crazy story like, oh no, I'm hinting at my past. And
oh, yeah.
You know, everyone wants to keep that under wraps. But also, as you get older, people start to let loose around you. You know, you are now your own entity. You have to be responsible. So now your parents can act like they used to. And, you know, they're not doing keg stands in the off the roof and then jumping in a pool. It's not a crazy frat party. But I mean, I think that most people let loose when they were younger because that's what young people do. And now you just cover it up to make sure that you're not corrupting the youth.
And now that we're no longer corruptible youth, but corrupted youth, they can let it let loose.
They can do whatever they want, because I've already, A, done it probably, and B, have made my decisions on when and if I will do that.
Yeah. I mean, also, another thing that I remember is, I don't know if you guys had, like, block parties for your neighborhood and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I just have memories of these block parties where various parents would just get completely wasted at these parties.
Oh yeah.
And having seen this in your, you know, 35, 40 year old parental neighbors as they're, you know, 30, as they're like 40 years old in front of their kids and the whole neighborhood, I don't see why I couldn't just assume that they were as bad or worse when they were 20.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that never comes up when you start talking about the current generation's epidemic with drinking is that, like, how do they pick it up in the first place? I mean, I think everyone who drank at a young age was doing it because they had access to that kind of stuff and had examples. I mean, that might be psychoanalyzing it a little
bit.
Well,
I saw a statistic somewhere. I don't remember how reliable the statistic was, but something like 50% of kids who report, there was some survey done where it was like 50 to 60% of kids who had reported that they drank in high school had also seen their parents drunk. And of the kids who...
This was in Highlights magazine.
I don't remember.
So it was very... It was a scientific poll.
But it was something I saw. but the kids who had not seen their parents drunk, there was a much lower percentage that had drunk in high school.
I guess I buy some of that, but at the same time, I think that it's so peer driven.
Yeah.
What do you mean that when you get the group people together and
if I didn't go to Penn State, I'm not even really knocking Penn State here, but if I didn't go to Penn State, like if I went to community college instead for 4 years, like I do not think that I would have consumed less alcohol.
Penn State is a party school.
I mean, there's just more drinking there, and it's a social thing, you know?
I do agree that it is a social thing, but you have to have some acceptance or some degree. You believe it's acceptable at some level, and I do think that part of that comes at home.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the question here is, it might be a social activity, and it might seem like it's in excess when you're at college at a frat party or like some sort of cookout football game nonsense. But at the end of the day, it's like it's probably not more so than it used to be. I can't imagine why it would escalate. I mean, do you have a theory on that, Ryan? If you actually think that it's more prevalent than it used to be?
I don't think personally that it's more than it used to be, but I've just heard a lot of, I don't know, it seems like there's a lot of fretting about this among college administrators.
All of a sudden.
Well, just what I've been in college. I mean, you know, like you see these things. Oh, there's even, you know, there's more and more binge drinking. People didn't used to binge
I think it
drink.
Comes from a heightening in responsibility, like taking more responsibility. And it's not so much that it's more drinking, it's less tolerance for nonsense. I feel like such a narc right now.
And I think partly it's less tolerance from the administrative perspective. They're trying to cut down on the drinking, I think. Not that they... They may be saying that there's more drinking now than there was, but I think it's more that they're just trying to cut down on drinking and...
That's true.
...make it less. I don't know if they're necessarily going about this in the right way, because like you said, one of the results of all this kind of these crackdowns is that instead of going to, you know, bar and drinking or whatever, or going to the party and drinking, people tend to just pregame in their room and take huge amounts of shots of like vodka to get themselves drunk because, well, partially it's cheaper, but also because that's the easier way to get alcohol when you are not 21.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a pretty viable theory here, because there's definitely been a rise in college administrators that are trying to take care of the students more.
Yeah, I get most of my information on this topic from movies like Animal House, so I don't know how valid that is.
You're right, there was a lot of drinking in that movie.
Or even think about The Great Gatsby. There was a lot of drinking at those parties. That's all I'm saying. So it seems like it's been going on for a long time. But how much beer did you guys drink with the 14-year-old scouts when you were in the woods? I mean, I can imagine that there must have been some crazy parties.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was kind of funny because I was you could see the beginning of some of these kids looking up to you as you get this massive cred by the fact that you are able to that you have consumed alcohol.
Really? Did they ask you about it?
You know, every once in a while, or you just talk about it, you know, among other adult
items. That actually, I'm very curious about that, because I think that is completely apt to this conversation. What kids are asking.
Wait,
I mean,
are you corrupting the youth
of
today?
Well, I was trying not to. I mean, it's very, you know, I don't know what like, this is a new scout leader problem, you know? I'm not used to not
Yeah, because if
a
kid asks you, is it fun to drink?
I don't know what you say. What do you say to that?
Well, as long as you don't have to buy them beer. Remember that. You don't have to buy Boy Scouts
beer. Don't
worry,
I resisted. I denied their request to purchase beer and Playboys.
Awesome. That seems like such a typical scout leader problem, and I congratulate you on your ability to avoid any confrontation or corrupting of young
minds. I guess
minds.
I kind of see the merits of waiting until you're a parent to be a scout leader, because then you
you seem less cool.
Well, you can just be a parent at that point, you know, like right. You can tell them, you know, drinking's not fun, you should never do it, with a straight face, even though you know you can kind of lie, but everybody expects you to lie in that situation, but no one would believe
no
me.
no one would believe you. On that note, I think that wraps things up for this week. Ryan, since you were in the middle of nowhere, I assume, how did your haircut last? I know you were very worried about getting bugs in it.
It actually worked great.
And infection.
Infection.
Yes.
Hair infection.
It was just a massive, massive week of high-risk hair exposure and water exposure and food exposure, and I have pretty much come out safely on the other side so far. I am knocking on wood as I say this, but...
Bravo.
Yeah.
I hope you no doctor or barber visits in the future for you. Well, thank you very much for tuning into this episode. You know where to find us. We're on Twitter, Sophisticast. We're on Tumblr, sophisticates.tumblr.com. We're on iTunes. Tell your friends. Throw in some suggestions. And if you're a parent, maybe this is the perfect time to respond to this wacky drinking problem. So feel free to chime in any of our conversations by emailing, tweeting, all of that social media nonsense. And we will see you next week.